Welcome to episode 116 of Breakout Culture. I'm Ed Vasian, I'm the culture editor at Country and Townhouse magazine.
And I'm Charlotte Metcalf, I'm the associate editor at Country and Townhouse. And today we're looking ahead to London's great Design Biennale, which opens on the 1st of June at Somerset House. Now in its fourth edition, the Biennale sets out to celebrate and showcase innovation in design that has the power to make our world a better place. The title and theme for this year is The Global Game, Remapping Collaborations. And to tell us all about it, we're delighted to welcome Victoria Brokes, the Biennale's director. Welcome, Vicky.
Thank you so much, Charlotte.
Good morning, Vicky. It's very good to have you back with us again. And of course, you were here 2 years ago telling us about the Biennale that took place towards the end of the pandemic. The world has moved on a lot since then. It obviously brings a whole new set of challenges as well as opportunities. This year is going to be a truly international event. We've got the artistic director of the New Institute, which is the Dutch National Museum and Institute for Architecture, Design and Digital Culture, led by Eric Chen, at the heart of this year's Biennale. Tell us about this collaboration, Vicky.
Oh, thank you. And hello, Ed. It's great to be back. I too can't believe that it's 2 years since the last one. And of course, that one was delayed by a year by the pandemic too. And then I think we came out of that thinking, phew, life will all go back to normal now. And of course, what we find is that the world is sort of upside down, I think. So really excited to be moving into the Biennale. I think it's been, again, quite a struggle in terms of, working with our many international partners. But what we wanted to spotlight for this year with the theme is the need for collaboration and the fact that the problems in the world, the challenges in the world and so on are unlikely to be able to be addressed by a single discipline or a single country or a single person, that we really need to work very hard together to make that possible. And just to say, I think design and architecture and so on are well known for being really collaborative disciplines. Most studios are very international already, but what the New Institute with Eric Chen were sort of spotlighting is that whatever we're doing, it's not really enough. So can we all think a little bit further and a little bit harder about what we need to do? And the Biennale will showcase some of those collaborations and some of those ideas.
I think what's so interesting about looking at a lot of what you've got happening is how many traditional solutions there are. You know, there's Abu Dhabi with its weaving, there's Spain and Peru with traditional sort of flamenco instruments. Malta's going to have a village square. Italy is going to have India is going to have a sort of one of its traditional open markets. Tell us about why you think that's happening, that people are sort of going back to traditional social cohesive solutions?
Well, that's a really interesting point. I think there are a number of kind of different ways to answer that. I mean, one is, I suppose the sort of model for a Biennale is quite traditional. And I think for me, what's quite interesting is that when we sort of set out on this one, there was a sense of, you know, is there even a role for the national pavilion within a Biennale when what we're talking about is international collaboration? But of course, the world perhaps has turned a bit more national over the last few years. So there's that aspect. But I think in terms of the installations themselves and the pavilions, it works very well, to my mind, to reference traditional practices, particularly when they can sort of speak of the past, show us something about the present, but also point to ways of working in the future. Because, of course, things that have been around for a long time often give us kind of guidance as to what works and what will last. So while some of the ones you spoke about are basically traditional, so when you're talking about weaving, the Saudi Arabian pavilion, which will be show weaving, but it literally takes a timeline from a sort of traditional weaving woven carpet up to the present day, where the visitors themselves will be able to come in and weave, and they'll be weaving with new materials in different ways, new instruments and so on. So that will be an indicator of kind of how things can progress, and in a way of kind of metaphor for that, something like Spain and Peru with their wonderful cajon.
What's a cajon?
A cajon is a drum, a type of drum, a percussive instrument that is used in traditional, now in traditional flamenco music. But its origins were actually from Africa into Peru. And it was only around 50 years ago that a very famous flamencan player visited Peru, saw the cajon and adopted it into his music. And now it is taken by Spaniards to be part of their music. And I think that shows very nicely how things move around the world and how, you know, one picks up things that one likes and adopts them, but not to forget their origins.
And you've got designers from Ukraine in the Biennale this year as well.
Yes, well, that is, of course, an absolute miracle. And I think, again, speaks to what people perceive as the power of such events as London Design Biennale to bring people together, to show them new things and new ideas, and to sort of give us all hope for the future. When we were first approached by Ukraine, we were absolutely thrilled and delighted. But I must say, we thought it had little chance of being able to happen. We've had meetings over the 2 years where, you know, they've had to be cancelled and they've said, oh, we've been underground for 3 days. But we're back, and they're back because they think it's really important to show that alongside the devastation of their everyday lives and the lives of the people in the country, there is great beauty and great possibilities within. And they want to keep that in our minds, as well as everything else that is, of course, in our minds. And not just Ukraine, also our Polish pavilion is strongly references what is going on in Ukraine. And it is around what was the Windows Project, where a call out went out in Poland for disused windows that you might have sort of thrown away, that might be sitting in your garage, for them to be collected and sent to Ukraine so that they could replace their broken and damaged and blown out windows. And they have brought, they're highlighting how, as designers, you know, your focus can change, and the most everyday, perhaps sort of banal objects can suddenly come to the forefront of what, you know, what's necessary. And that is what design is. It's addressing the needs of the time. So their pavilion is about presenting windows, and they've had a call out actually in London as well, all of which will go after the event to Ukraine. One more Ukrainian exhibitor in our refugee humanitarian pavilion by the famous Japanese architect Shigeru Ban, who has created a really both beautiful, practical, and easily portable solution to temporary accommodation for refugees. But that is also animated in a space with Ukrainian poetry and literature.
Is he the one famous, Vicky, for creating amazing earthquake-proof kind of cardboard buildings and things, Shigeru Ban?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, this pavilion is not only made of paper, in terms of the walls are made of paper in a sort of Japanese technique, but the rolls that they are carried on actually are the subject, a bit like a sort of kitchen paper roll. You wrap the paper that will then become the wall onto an inner roll, which will then become the structure, which will sort of come out and become the structure. So it's all very ingenious.
That sounds absolutely amazing. Can I just focus on some of the, if I could call it this, the sort of political pavilions? Because you've got a care pavilion that focuses on the ethics of care. You've got a Chatham House pavilion that looks at climate change. And also you've got the robot artist Ida.
I mean, certainly my perception, having done many exhibitions over the years, previously at the V&A, is that the state of the world is impossible to ignore, really, and if one does so, it's a little bit blind to do that. And I think as a result, there's almost not an exhibit that doesn't in some way reference what's going on and ways of addressing it. So that, you know, it's not a misery fest by any means. It's very uplifting as an exhibition. But in terms of the specifics, obviously the theme this year, chosen by the New Institute and Eric Chen, is the Global Game Remapping Collaborations. And we wanted to make something of that aspect of the game. And the idea that games can, as well as being sort of competitive and mean, they can also be collaborative and fruitful. And so the there is a game. There's been an online game that all the participants can play, and so they can make connections, you know, way before they get to London with everybody else who'll be taking part. But also the game aspect has been developed by the Chatham House Pavilion, as you say, with a game called The Future for Beginners, which will showcase how. Actually, you can play a game, you can play it in teams, you can try out other people's points of view, you can try out other solutions, you can see what happens when you take particular courses of action without actually having to take those courses of action. So that is something, I'm sure you know, but I mean, that's something that's actually used by, you know, the World Bank and so on to test hypotheses and so on. And that's something we'll be able to do, the public will be able to do in the Biennale this year by booking in to play the game. David Finnegan, who has developed it, is both a performer and a climate scientist, and there'll be experts on hand to sort of talk through what various choices that you make as you're playing will likely lead to. So I think that will be a lot of fun. We have another game as well, which is also political, which is from MUDAC, the museum in Switzerland. And they are taking Buckminster Fuller's game. Buckminster Fuller developed the World Peace game in the 1960s, where he supposed that we could actually address world miseries. And inequalities and health inequalities and the economy, if we knew had all the right data and the right way of sort of working with it. MUDAC are sort of postulating that we now actually do have the ability to do that, but that it's not as simple as it seems. So that's games are many. Just to go to Ada the robot. So she's been. Yeah, you may have seen her around. She's done a TED talk and she's been working in art for some time. She is, I suppose, a kind of human face of AI. And as we're all very aware, you can barely sort of turn on the radio or the television now without hearing on the news how AI is going to change our lives. And I think we all know that's true. But for many of us, it's really hard to understand what that actually means. And certainly I see Ada as a way of kind of humanising that, raising the questions which are clearly in need of debate. But what she has recently done is move into the world of design. She's apparently thinking of training to become an architect, and she will be there raising those questions about what AI will do to all our lives.
Will we be able to interact with her? Can we go and ask her what she's going to build? Or, I mean, how much can the public interact?
She will be present from time to time, but not all the time. Her work will be there. She will be part of a talk that's going on. We have a fantastic, I would like to say, we have an absolutely fantastic public program, which is Biennale Forum and Biennale Sessions going on throughout, because so much of this, I think, and I hope that's kind of coming through in this conversation, so much is sort of the questions that come out of things. It's not just sort of seeing things and thinking, oh, well, that's that, you know, I understand all that now. It's everything that you see will kind of raise as many questions as it answers. And those, you know, that programming is there to make sure the Biennale isn't just a sort of event, it's the start of a conversation as well.
And what kind of things has she made that we can see?
Yeah, well, she's made pots and bowls and dishes. She's spent time in St. Ives, so she's sort of taken reference from Lucy Ree and potters like that. But of course, she's, you know, thoroughly sort of absorbent and whatever she sees. I imagine that being at the Biennale for a bit will also affect her future to see. And of course, there are, you know, there's huge sort of discourse around what that means for design. I, you know, personally, what do I know? But I don't feel that, you know, design is imperiled, but certainly in terms of the sort of human factor, because she could only take in what she has seen, and I guess doesn't have the power of imagination, which is so much part of design. But that's, you know, that's all up for debate.
Yeah, we might see. She might have a wild imagination.
Well, I suppose it depends what imagination is, doesn't it? I mean, maybe it is just Maybe it's just sort of remembering everything you've ever seen and heard and, you know, coming up with the next thing.
Talking about somebody who has a wild imagination, you've got Ez Devlin involved again this year.
Actually, we haven't got Ez involved except as a judge. She's on the jury. So we have a fantastic group of people who come in at the beginning of the Biennale, and they will actually go around all the pavilions and award three medals. And Ez is a very treasured member of that team. Of course, she was our artistic director in 2021, and a, you know, a great sort of friend to the organisation, and somebody who really sort of has shown, I think, so magnificently how stories can be told through design. So, you know, it's also very hard sometimes to explain that, you know, some of the things that we have on show are actually the actual thing that will, you know, change the world, the actual sort of, you know, motor in a car or whatever. But some of them are about telling a story and making us think differently about things. And one is for addressing the theme, one is for the best overall design, and we have one that is awarded by the public. So everybody who comes to the Biennale will be encouraged to vote. Later on in the Biennale, we have, you know, we'll have a ceremony. We have a late, I think it's the 21st of June, where under 25s go free, in fact. And we'll be awarding the public medal, and Eric Chen and the team from Het Nieuw will be coming over for that. So, you know, it's really worth sort of looking at the programme, seeing when you can play the game, when there are sort of special evenings and events, when special talks that you'd be particularly interested in are on.
Let's go back to the Care Pavilion, because you were just about to tell us about that.
So it comes out of Beijing, but it is deliberately not the China Pavilion. It's the prime designer is from the Central Academy of Fine Arts in Beijing. And she proposes, with a huge team, which is very collaborative and very international as well as interdisciplinary, to sort of host a space where there will be, around the concept of care, or sort of analysing the word care from, you know, sort of philosophically and etymologically and in all kinds of different ways. And there's a care manifesto, and there'll be a care walk, and there'll be sort of care events all taking place in either in the pavilion itself, which is sort of at the heart of Somerset House. It's in the area in the mezzanine, so below the centre, on the kind of river terrace side. Then they'll be, you know, they'll be doing hosting events throughout the 25 days.
I mean, I love this idea of how, you know, the ethics of care, which I can't think of an era in which we need that more, given the horrors that are going on all over the world, how that translates into design is going to be absolutely fascinating. I'd love to know what that pavilion is going to look like.
Well, I suppose that's, I mean, that I suppose does manifest, and I mean, that brings up a, you know, really good point. What is design? And our proposition is that design is much more than you think it is. And I guess that sort of comes through in all the different ways it will be proposed in the exhibition. But the pavilion itself is designed, but it's actually designed as a space that is a backdrop. But then the programme is designed to consider care in all its aspects. And that also is design, if you take design to mean the sort of addressing of a brief and proposing solutions to it.
So let's talk now about Eureka, because this is completely new for this year, isn't it? Tell us all about that.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited about Eureka. And it is new, but it's also came out, maybe Ada would have come up with it. It came out of what happened in 2021, when we had fewer countries, unsurprisingly, sort of mid-pandemic than we might otherwise have done. And we went out to a few universities and asked them to present in a sustainability and innovation section of the exhibition. So we just had three. We had the RCA, Kingston and Cambridge University. But these were terrifically popular. They were picked up by the media, popular with the public. And the universities themselves said, well, this is great. You know, we're used to exhibiting ourselves, but we don't usually get out amongst other exhibitors to show what we're doing. And of course, research in the UK is, you know, really quite supreme. Very, very wonderful things going on behind closed doors that the public is mostly unaware of. So this year we thought we'll make that a special exhibition alongside the London Design Biennale, and it is in a sense the UK element of London Design Biennale. 10 universities have come forward, and this, I should say, is not student work. This is, you know, postdoctoral research institutes within universities, like the like NICA at Newcastle University, which is around aging. We have Kingston, we have the RCA, we have Cambridge back again. They're quite diverse projects. We have a couple around aging and this idea of the 100-year life and the fact that more of us will be living to, probably not us, but, you know, more people will be living to 100. And, you know, that what does that mean in terms of, you know, work life, health and all of those things, and considering that. We have exhibits of new materials. So Cambridge, for those who came in 2021, were exhibiting ways of working with wood as a sustainable material in architecture. And they have developed that to not only the sustainable material in architecture, but also this really wonderful idea, I think, of being able to sort of to create your house flexibly. And with this moving, folding wooden screen and its ability to, you know, do all kinds of different things, actually sort of live, you know, over many years, which I suppose also relates in a sense to the aging one. So that's a third exhibit. And there are quite sort of obscure, different, unusual things. One, you know, addressing problems in the ocean, one actually looking at seaside arcades. But really, I hope, raising the profile of university research departments, putting those departments in touch with each other, but also with the public, and I hope inspiring the sort of future generation of problem solvers.
So you've been doing the Biennale since 2016, and I remember going to the first one, and this will be the fourth Biennale. It obviously takes a huge amount of work, but is it now a sort of established part of the international calendar? Do governments around the world now say, yep, we want to make sure our people are exhibiting at the London Design Biennale this year?
That is a really a really good question. I mean, a really good thing to raise. It's I've been saying throughout this, I joined the Biennale to do the last one, and, you know, there was very much a sense, you know, talking to the countries, and, you know, our first sort of outreach is to ambassadors and cultural attachés, and, you know, for some of those, it's what is it, not when is it, and I saw this this period as being where we turned it from what is it to when is it. And I really do believe that, you know, both in the sort of, you know, the quality of what it will be when it opens on the 1st of June, and the conversations that we've been having, that we are just on the sort of brink of making that leap. We do have a number of kind of core countries for which it's sort of in their cultural calendar. There is a budget. But many countries, and many of the richest countries, actually, like America, the USA, or Germany, don't do it quite like that. They say, yeah, we love the Biennale, we're really supportive of it, find a great project, come back to us and talk to us about it. So we actually go out on a number of, well, in all different ways to find the projects. And, you know, we this year have noticed, for example, the Nordic countries, which previously have been sort of strong exhibitors, their budgets have been cut. We do have the most fantastic Denmark and actually Switzerland pavilion, which is a kind of floating home. But those countries have lost their funding for this year. Germany actually has lost its funding for this year. So it's been a struggle. So, you know, it's not easy, but it, you know, in the way that Ukraine has sort of fought so hard to be here, many of our exhibitors have fought hard to be here. You know, they put a lot of effort into this, and it's really wonderful when people, you know, are thrilled by what they see and enjoy it.
And I'm just wondering, overall, given this, there's the Design Biennale is all about really confronting the great challenges. What is emerging as the biggest challenge? Is it war? Is it climate change? What are people really, really trying to address this year? Because it's very interesting what you were saying about building flexible housing, because there's been so much about, particularly in the South Seas, you know, whole villages having to be packed up and taken up a hill because the ocean's just going to come and flood them. So is it climate change the biggest problem? Is it rebuilding after war?
That's also a brilliant question. And of course, it's sort of interesting because, you know, one has the theme and then the responses come through, and through those responses, you see what's on people's minds now. And I think that's, you know, also something I want to kind of say to the public. This will be what's on your mind now, I think, because there will be something here that will be exactly, oh, I was just thinking that the other day. What we see is, I'd say, in comparison to previous years, is obviously the environment and the climate crisis has not gone away in any shape or form. However, it is now so sort of intrinsic that it underpins, I'd say, every pavilion. So some of them are still about it, but for the majority, there is kind of included in them, certainly, you know, their life cycle, what they're going to do, you know, in every way, both in the way we put on the exhibition, but also in the way those exhibitions are built and the exhibitors' processes. Care for the environment and understanding of the importance of that. And then on top of that, telling stories in new materials, sustainable materials and so on, of how we can improve the environment or address the challenges. That is a big theme. Another big theme is design and technology, living well with technology, the sort of AI aspects and so on. So we see exhibits a lot around that. And the third one, again, relating to what you said, forced migration, refugees and so on is a big subject now. So we have actually framed our programming around those three sort of inner themes.
That's absolutely fascinating. And I can't wait to come and see it. And just tell our listeners how to get a ticket, what you do, how long it's on for.
So it opens on the 1st of June at Somerset House and runs until the 25th of June. You can get a ticket on londondesignbiennale.com. It takes place at Somerset House, so you can also go straight to Somerset House website. But also do look out for all those special events, special talks, special evenings, and so on. And from bread making to playing that environmental game, it's all happening. So, you know, do come down and enjoy.
A huge good luck with it. Thank you so much, Vicky, for coming on and telling us all about it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Vicky.
Next week, we're going to be visiting the exhibition about the Rossettis at Tate Britain. 150 works have been gathered that aim to show quite how radical and extraordinarily talented the Rossetti family was. Some of Elizabeth Siddal's work that's never been seen before is on display, as well as poetry by all of them, including the poem by Dante Gabriel Rossetti that was exhumed from Elizabeth's grave 7 years after her death. We'll be talking to the curator, Carol Jacoby, about this ambitious show, which aims to present the Rossettis in a new light and reposition them as revolutionary artists who defied the status quo and focused on the personal and emotional in their art.
That's it for another episode of Breakout Culture, but please don't forget to visit countryandtownhouse.com, where you'll find the latest edition of the magazine and our sister podcast, House Guest with Carol Annette, in which she talks to some of the most fascinating and influential names in interior design. If you enjoyed today, please make sure you follow us or subscribe. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love you to leave us a rating and a review, as it really helps others to find the show. And if there's anything at all in the arts and culture landscape you think we should be talking about or investigating, please send me an email to charlotte@countryandtownhouse.co.uk. And don't forget to follow Country and Townhouse on social media. You can find the links to all our accounts in the podcast show notes.
Talking of House Guest, Carol Annette's guest this week is the Iranian-born designer Noor Chafji. Noor now heads up Celine Interiors, and she's going to be chatting to Carol about juggling her family and career while combining influences from her Iraqi culture. That's sure to be a fascinating listen. And just to mention that Sunday, the 28th, is Celebration Day, a day conceived to remember people we've loved and lost. And I will be at the wonderful Hay Festival with a panel chaired by Lizzie Pickering, whose book When Grief Equals Love has just been published. On the panel will be the multidisciplinary writer and author Osman Yusuf Saada, Composer and musician James McConnell, who lost his cabaret partner Kit Hesketh Harvey earlier this year, and the best-selling crime writer Claire McIntosh. Regular listeners will know that both James McConnell and Kit Hesketh Harvey, and of course also Osman Yusuf Sardar, have been on the podcast in the past, and we've extensively covered Hay Festival. So do catch that panel if you can. It will be on Hay's website, and if you're at Hay, it's on Sunday night at 8:30. Have a lovely weekend. See you next week.
Have a lovely weekend. Goodbye.